Welcome to the Estate Planning Experts Podcast. Created by best-selling author and nationally recognized estate planning attorney, Shane Smith. On each episode, we bring together experts in various aspects of estate planning to help you protect your family, your assets, and your peace of mind. To get your free copy of Mr. Smith's Consumer Awareness Guide, How to Avoid the 7 Deadly Sins of Estate Planning, or if you are in Atlanta and are interested in your free Estate Planning for Life consultation, simply register at www.theestateattorneyatlanta.com.
Today I have the good fortune of interviewing Edwin Coons. Ed, thanks so much for agreeing to let us interview you.
Well, I'm glad to do it. I don't know
how much. Let me take you back in time a little bit and ask you what inspired you to become a financial advisor.
I just almost fell into it. I was still a student at LSU, and my college professor, I was looking for a course that was at a certain time of day, and the course's name was life insurance. And I took it, and the instructor was so good, I took another course with him the next semester. Next thing I knew, I had, was majoring in insurance. So I didn't make a decision to go into it. It was an accident.
How about that? That is an incredible story. Now, have you been at the same firm your entire career, or has there been sort of a journey?
The same firm, same company, National Life.
Good for you. I imagine that we've seen the turnover in the financial services industry can be quite high. So, A, the fact that you have been in the business for so long is a testament to your ability to help folks, and your staying at the same firm, obviously, says a lot about your loyalty and your persistence.
It says something else. I've never had a resume.
I wouldn't have thought of that. That is an excellent point. Now, if we got a bunch of different estate planning experts in a room, they obviously all have different opinions and different takes on it. If you were meeting with a layperson, a client for the first time, and they asked you what estate planning was, how would you answer that?
Trying to make sure the right people get the right assets and that they get them in a form that they can use.
The right people getting the right assets in a form they can use.
Yeah, I know for many, many years, so you get the same answer from everybody, save estate taxes. And that's important, but it's never been the most important thing.
What's the most important?
To make sure that the right people get the right assets.
What do you like most about estate planning?
Oh, boy. Trying to help people to make sure that whatever they want to have happen to their stuff actually does happen.
And that brings up an interesting point, saying that helping people make sure that what they want to happen is what actually happens implies that a lot of times, or without your assistance, it won't happen. So let me ask you, what are some of the most common mistakes you see people making when planning their estate?
The most common mistake is not doing any planning at all. That is probably the most common mistake there is. When I start talking to somebody and discover, they bought some life insurance and they have an investment account. They've never done anything in the form of planning.
Okay. What are some, let's say they've created a plan. What are some of the mistakes you see people making a lot with their plans once they have them?
Oh, boy. There's no common theme, but a fairly common one is failure to keep up with the beneficiaries on their insurance. A very common thing is somebody dies, and lo and behold, the ex-wife is still the beneficiary on some of the life insurance. And the insurance company, of course, is stuck. They have to pay to whoever is named in the documents.
And how, this might seem like a simple question, but it's simple because you and I do it every day. It's not necessarily the most common sense answer to a layperson, but what is an easy way that you would solve that problem?
Review it every once in a while. At least review it when you're doing your planning.
And okay, so a regularly occurring review.
Right. And by review, I don't mean just ask him who he thinks is the beneficiary, because he'll be wrong once in a while. I write to the insurance companies or ask to see the actual policy.
What estate planning technique do you use that you wish more clients knew about?
You know, I don't know. I don't think, well, gee, everybody ought to do so-and-so. It depends on the individual person.
Right. Obviously, advice should be customized for each client situation. Is there a technique that you use that when you present it to clients, they say something like, I never knew you could do that, or how come no one else told me about that?
I don't have any such plan.
Okay. Obviously, you have confidentiality and privacy policies to protect your clients. Without revealing any names, can you tell me about a hypothetical, most recent estate planning client? We can call them Mr. and Mrs. Jones, and can you tell me a little bit about what they came to you for and what their situation was?
Well, it's not real recent, but the most interesting case that I've ever had to fool with was many years ago, and I was brought in by their property casualty insurance agent, and we started looking at stuff. The daddy, it was a company with second and third generation, and the daddy was still working and working hard and trying. And I looked at his income tax return, and he was still paying $7,800 a year to the widow of his brother, who had been a half owner of the company. You know, not that there was any contract, but that's what he was doing. And by the time you looked through all of his information, he wasn't even making a living from that company. If he wasn't selling a cow every once in a while from his cattle that he was raising, he'd have been going in the hole. So, you know, that was one thing we had to change. And the company was making a lot of money at that time. Since then, they've gone out of business, but they, at the time, they were making a lot of money. So we ended up, among the other things we did, we put in a retirement plan, defined benefit retirement plan, that had almost $30,000 a year going into it, almost all of it for the daddy because of his age. That was during the time when, you know, we had these whip inflation now, and so you couldn't change things without justifying them. So by the time we got done with this thing, I wasn't able to ever come up with a single, you know, here's a plan from A to Z. I had 9 separate problems I'd identified, and I had just wrote a one-page description of the problem and what I suggested that they could do. You know, I couldn't, the whole thing wouldn't make sense. So anyway, by the time we got done, they had recapitalized the corporation, done a bunch of other things. They had a law firm in Atlanta that they were really, that they used. So we hooked up with them, and they did trusts and wills and so forth. And when it was all over, and the trusts had been accepted by trust company and so forth. And, of course, I knew the assets. So I asked the trust officer if I could see a copy of the trust. And so he sent it to me, and I gave him a phone call. I said, go to this page and let's read this paragraph together and see if it says what I think it says. And in there it said that the widow, could access the assets in that trust only in the case of a dire medical emergency, period. No other qualifications. And I knew that all the money was going to end up in the trust because she had the standard, he had the standard will that left her the land and the cattle and the trucks and some other stuff. So all of the marital deduction was going to be satisfied with other assets that were not liquid and were not, that's something she could spend. And she couldn't get anything out of the trust except in case of a dire medical emergency. At that point, the trust officer used a phrase. He says, "Oh, shit."
That's a technical term.
Is that a technical term? He says, "It is now." So anyway, it was an irrevocable trust, so they had to do some fancy jiggling to get that taken care of. The funny part about it, when this whole thing was over, I called the lawyer that they worked with here in Atlanta, and I asked him, "How much did you charge him to do all of that work?" He says, "Ed, we only charged him $18,000. I said, "How could you do that much work for that little money?" He says, "You had already done the work. I should have charged him for it." But anyway.
Wow.
That's one case that's ever since. That's an incoming call, but it's an unknown name, and I never answer them anyway.
An interesting case.
Yeah.
That's probably not your, let's say, normal bread and butter situation. Who's an ideal client for you?
Well, I'm 83 years old now, or will be 83 in April. So my ideal client is one of my old clients that is already a client, and I go back and make sure things are still going well with them. Business owners are the best clients for what I do. You help them plan for survival of the business.
So if there's a business owner reading this or listening to this, what is the first step you would want them to take to engage with you?
Call me.
And what phone number would you like them to call you on?
926-9792 in area 770.
Okay. Well, we have been talking here with Edwin Coons of National Life, and I greatly, that's been some fascinating information. I greatly appreciate your time, and thank you so much for agreeing to be interviewed.
Well, thank you. I'm surprised that's all there was to it.
let me ask you that. What should I have asked you that I didn't?
I don't know. That's your job.
Is there anything else you'd like to share?
Not
you feel a affluent business owner should know?
All business owners are affluent compared to what the general public thinks of them. Have you ever heard read the book The Millionaire Next Door?
Of course.
Yeah. Most small business owners, small meaning 10 or 15, 20 employees, are a lot better off financially than people think they are. But most of them also have been so busy building their business that they've never done any planning. So.
That is probably very true, and they probably think their retirement plan or estate plan is they're going to sell their company someday.
That's what they're planning on doing. But who are they going to sell it to? And how much are they going to get for it?
So it would probably make sense the first thing they should do is talk to you about how to plan for the successful succession of their business so that the business also gets to where it wants to go and they get paid what it is actually worth at that point in time, and
right.
that money gets to them the way they want it to go to sustain their lifestyle and retirement. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah. One thing, if they can't find anybody to buy it or it's not a sellable business, I can tell them to sell it to National Life. Buy a policy, we'll write a check to your wife, and you can just lock the door and walk away. If that's what it takes.
I did not know that was a possibility. That's a very creative concept.
Well, certainly you're always free to just shut the thing down.
Okay. I apologize. I thought you said sell it to National Life. I didn't realize what you meant. I thought you meant National Life was going around. I didn't think that's what you meant. They were buying businesses. I apologize.
No. We're not going to buy the business. We'll just give you a check for what you say it's worth. And after that, if you want to just lock the door and walk away, you're free to do so. Still free to sell it if you can, but you're no longer dependent on you have to get X number of dollars for it.
Okay. That makes a whole lot more sense. I understand now. I appreciate your clarification there.
All righty.
Well, thank you so much again for agreeing to be interviewed, and I'm sure that the folks reading this got a lot out of it. I did as well, and again, this has been an interview with Edwin Coons of National Life. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. We'll see you.